I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My guest today is Jonathan Miller Weisberger, who is Gurria de Oso's founder and steward. Jonathan, or Sparrow, as his friends call him, was born in Berkeley, California, and raised from a very young age in the country of Ecuador. Since 2000, he has been living 9 months a year in Costa Rica's Osa Peninsula, overlooking all aspects of the construction of Gurria de Oso's center. He is more than our Jeffy. He is also Gurria's principal rainforest guide, plant master, storyteller, and much more. He likes to consider himself a professional beach bum, but that is far from the truth. Quite on the contrary, he is an intrepid and knowledgeable rainforest guide and ethnobotanist with 15 years of ground-level experience, having guided over 550 participants into remote regions of Ecuador, Peru, and Costa Rica. He also practices and teaches massage, foot reflexology, Tai Chi, and Deo in Taos exercises for health, I Ching study, herbology, and is Gurria's on-site surf instructor. Jonathan is an enthusiastic storyteller whose extensive and knowledgeable understanding of rainforest medicine, flora, and indigenous life and worldview is unique. He has collaborated as an ethnobiologist and as a rainforest conservation advocate, living for over 10 years between 1990 and 2000 in the upper Amazon among five distinct indigenous peoples, communities, and tribes. Co-author of two ethnobiological bilingual educational books dedicated to indigenous youth in Amazonian Ecuador, Jonathan has published articles in Spanish and English. He has collected over 2,500 herbal specimens deposited in several herbariums in Ecuador and Peru. He has also collaborated on, initiated, and overseen innovative rainforest conservation projects, including the creation of biological reserves, decolonization, and the demarcation of indigenous territories, buffer zones, around natural parks, ancestral land reclamation, and cultural heritage revival. He has been influential in saving thousands of hectares of rainforest lands, primarily in Ecuador, on behalf of the project. His book, Rainforest Medicine, Preserving Indigenous Science and Biodiversity in the Upper Amazon, was published in 2012. And discusses many of the herbs in the rainforest. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Jonathan, and I look forward to hearing about healing and rainforest medicine. Now, first, Jonathan, can you tell us about your book, Rainforest Medicine, Preserving Indigenous Science and Biodiversity in the Upper Amazon?
Thank you, Carl, for having me on your show. Yes, of course, thank you. The book is a synthesis of over 20 years of experience. It took about 3 years to write, and I only wrote from 3 in the morning till sunrise because it's for two reasons. One is the only time I really had available to write because of my work responsibilities throughout the day. And then also at that time, I had no interruptions and more lucid. I found myself much more lucid. So the book is really about awakening a culture of service, a culture where we dissolve each individual as a path to health and happiness, you know, has an opportunity to dissolve illusory boundaries of separation and how to find that balance in everyday life. But it also is a call to responsibility as well, because I feel that the rainforest is important for people the world over to understand and learn more about, at least for hopefully, you know, those interested, the plight of the forest and more about the in-depth phenomena of what the rainforest itself, the indigenous cultures. And I had the opportunity between 1990 and the year 2000 to work amongst five indigenous communities, the Wa'ulani people, who are one of Ecuador's most recently contacted indigenous group. They're a deep forest society. And then the Sequoias in the, to the north, and then the Quechua, as well as other indigenous communities, forest people communities in Peru, some in Ecuador. But the book mainly is about three different indigenous societies, the Huaorani, the Sequoia, or as they call themselves, the Siecopai, and the Quechua, or the Runa, in the upper Amazon, Ecuadorian region of the upper Amazon. And also it revolves around the sacred mountain of Napo Galeras, which I worked on between 1990 and 1994. I was influential in helping this mountain to become declared a national park. And while I worked on that mountain, later I went on to work with the Sequoia, and to my amazement, I began to hear from the elders in my work documenting indigenous traditions. And I'm an ethnobotanist, so I spent considerable time in those years studying the medicinal plant lore amongst these indigenous communities, as well as documenting cultural oral tradition, the mythologies and the oral tradition of these peoples. And I was amazed that these three indigenous groups held the same mountain of Napo Galeras, which is an isolated limestone massif that juts out from the lowland Amazon 80 kilometers east of the Andes, that these three indigenous communities are completely separate, but even though they live relatively nearby, they're separate in their historic upbringing, and their languages are completely different as English is to Chinese, so to say. They're extremely different languages, but they all held the same mountain as a sacred mountain. So the book, Chapter 8, called The Eyebrows of the Andes, talks about the mega biological diversity of the upper Amazon, but also about the sacred mountain and these three indigenous groups and their mythologies related to this mountain. But then the book is also about the ancient plant medicine science of Yahe, also known as ayahuasca, and it clearly outlines some of the historic and traditional cultural fabric related to this medicine, which is now, as you may be aware, and is actually, as I say in the book, the grandmother medicine has lifted her wings and she's taking flight the world over. In other words, this plant medicine is traveling the world over, and people are participating in ceremonies in the United States and Europe and all over the world, but it's of Amazonian origin. And so a lot of people maybe are participating in these ayahuasca ceremonies, you know, seeking solace from this plant medicine for their healing or for their search for enlightenment or, you know, for trying to achieve balance, whichever the people's purposes are. But they might not know about the cultural or historic traditions related to this sacred plant medicine in its original Amazonian context. So I felt it was a call of responsibility to kind of, you know, offer this perspective so that people who are interested in using these plant medicines can have wisdom related to the historic and cultural use of this tradition. But ultimately, it all goes back to awakening the cultural service wherever we are. Some people, they're in a greater position to outreach and to, you know, involve themselves in efforts to preserve the rainforest and help indigenous families. Other people, you know, each in their own way, whichever we have to be, I feel, you know, in this time and age, part of a solution to helping the world be improve the quality of life for both human beings and nature everywhere. So that's the ultimate message of the book.
Great. Now, Jonathan, will you tell us about the Rainforest Plant Medicine Council's gathering that's coming up in January?
Thank you very much. The Sequoias, I've worked with the Sequoias for over 25 years now, and I was just down there, spent a month down there, and before sharing more about the council gatherings, I'd like to share a little bit about the Sequoia, because they are the, you know, Sequoia elders come to facilitate the renewal and the healing ceremonies at the retreat. And the Sequoias are an ethnic minority. There's about 350 Sequoias in Ecuador, and another possibly 350 in Peru. So they're an ethnic minority. But what's interesting, in their oral tradition, they have stories that go back to very, very, very remote past. And at the time, I'm actually working on recuperating, on documenting the Sequoia mythology, and we're producing a trilingual book series, magazine series for the Sequoia schools, but it's going to be in Pankoka, which is the Sequoia language, Spanish and English, upon their request. So it's part of a campaign that we're calling the Siecopai Cultural Bridge Initiative, to help preserve the Sequoia culture, but also to help the world, you know, other people interested in these ancient traditions and traditional cultures, who, that, you know, to help make a bridge so people can learn from them as well. because it's part of an ancient prophecy, and this is that time. It's coming up to come in together, the eagle and the condor, they say. But it really is about a time where people, you know, the world over are looking back to traditional cultures to find a way to live happier and more fulfilling lives. So it's also not just about rescuing the Sequoia culture for the Sequoias, but it's about making a bridge so that they can also have more friends and that there can be a true intercultural exchange occurring. So the Sequoia elders, and the Sequoia are beautiful people, and their culture is really one of pure beauty. They have a lot of elements in their culture that transcend Sequoia tradition and Sequoia culture as well, that can really enrich people's lives everywhere. And they're happy to share, too. They're not... It's amazing, really, because, you know, for example, the Sequoia lost almost all their population to illnesses introduced by, you know, colonist settlers in the turn of the century. So that's, you know, the reason why there's so few Sequoia today, because they had no immunities to the new illnesses brought in. And so many, you know, 1,000, the greater, you know, 90% of the Sequoia population basically perished in the turn of the century from illnesses. But the Sequoia, they say that they have, you know, they have legends related to this plant medicine tradition, that they're one of the original, basically, receivers. They received this tradition from celestial immortals, who they call God's multicolored people. And this tradition was received to them in ancient times in the wilderness, on the border area, on the border between Ecuador and Peru. And so the way they uphold the tradition as they learned it through this celestial transmission, which is really amazing to think, because only recently had the Sequoia started having more contact with the outsiders. So it's a direct transmission from these, you know, celestial immortals in ancient times to this very humble indigenous, you know, people that, that have been sustaining the tradition for thousands of years and now sharing it with, you know, interesting Westerners. And we do the gatherings twice a year at a lodge. In January, it will be held at the Guadiriosa Eco Lodge, Orca Diosa Eco Lodge in Costa Rica. And the lodge is located on the Yosa Peninsula, and it's a really interesting place, because not only because of just the sheer natural beauty, it's also a wilderness setting. It's an hour boat ride from the nearest docks, the town of Sierpe, to our beach. And the beach is beautiful, wilderness beach, paradise beach, people-friendly beach, I call, because there's no, like, undertones or riptides. It's a safe beach for swimming. But it's in the whole forest behind us is original primary rainforest. And so the council gatherings are 10 days, which is intended to kind of replicate an experience as if we were going to go out to the Sequoia territory. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of traveling to get to where the Sequoia live in the Amazon. And you don't go and just turn around the next day and return. You know, you stay. So 10 days is kind of just the amount of time. But, you know, the 10 days are very action-packed, so to say. We have three renewal ceremonies and three proper all-night ceremonies guided by the Sequoia elders. And the renewal ceremonies basically are an amazing traditional ancient part of this tradition, and it's to get the body kind of more accustomed to the medicine and to clean up from them. What they entail is basically drinking 3 to 5 gallons, if you can get that much down, but at least, you know, 2 or 3 gallons of this huge gourdfuls of this alkaline-rich rainforest leaf tea. And so it's drunk, a big gourd is drunk, and then the 15 minutes pass, and one vomits. It's an emetic. Then another gourd is drunk, you vomit again, and then at least 3 times, some people want to go more, 5, 6 times, you drink and vomit, and it cleanses the body of many toxins, and it kind of prepares one to be able to receive the medicine. So we do 3 of these renewal ceremonies, and then we have a ceremonial lodge up on the hill, and the ceremonial lodge is in just a very beautiful location. It's up on a hill in a very private setting. Behind the lodge is a beautiful primary rainforest with lots of birds and wildlife. No hunting occurs in the area, so the animals are very tame and not afraid of people, and it's easy to have very significant animal and wildlife encounters there, and lots of birds. And then before us is this the vast expanse of the beautiful Pacific Ocean. So it's a very beautiful place to experience these ritual ceremonies with the Sequoia elders, who guide the ceremony through song. And then, yeah, it's a 10-day retreat, so we have in between the ceremonial days, which on those days we fast, just drink water till about noon. We have, you know, really scrumptious, wholesome, all-natural cooking and good food. And then we also do arts and crafts as a form of contemplative meditation. We do art therapy. We do yoga. We have, we always have a different area of acupuncturists or body workers to help facilitate people through some massage work or acupuncture. Mm-hmm. And we also have Qigong practice optional for those who are interested in learning, and then rainforest walks, rainforest exploration as well. So it's a really beautiful 10-day experience, and people basically, everybody that comes leaves completely renewed, and some people leave healed of really deep issues as well.
Now, the beginning sounds like detoxing, is that right?
Precisely so, my good friend called. The renewal ceremony, the detoxification ceremony.
And are there herbs or rainforest things that people take separately because of their health condition, or is it pretty much a wellness-type approach where people are, becoming more spiritually oriented?
The proper word is a wellness retreat. But it's important to understand, too, that wellness is something that is also, it's about an integration of body, mind, and spirit.
Right.
Oftentimes people are ill because there's a disconnect from these three vital elements that make up the human being.
Mm-hmm.
People are thinking one thing, but feeling another thing. Or, there's also a lot of people are sick today because of holding on to a lot of mental constructs that aren't allowing them to really, their bodies to release. And so people are holding on to grudges, resentments. So to have the opportunity to be with the elders in the ceremony, to detox, to participate in the healing ceremonies with the elders. Many illnesses are actually, that's something that Western medicine doesn't realize, but according to indigenous medicine, indigenous science, and holistic indigenous healing method, they view all illnesses to have a spiritual counterpart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the shaman masters, the people that come to facilitate these ceremonies, are experienced torchbearer shaman, healers, basically. They're traditional elders that have been through rigorous self-discipline, self-challenge programs. And so that self-challenge program, through the traditional context, through the imbibing of very, very strong entheogenic sacred plant medicines, allows them to confirm communion with different spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And the spirits that the Sequoia work with are highly evolved immortals. They're immortal doctors, basically. And the Sequoia culture is very beautiful. For example, like on the path of initiation, they first are obliged to meet the celestial immortals. They believe that once you can meet the celestial immortals, then the path of these healers is to meet the earth, the spirits of the earth. Because many of the spirits of the earth are basically capricious, double-sided spirits that they can help in one way, but they also do damage. They're called wati. So all illnesses have a corresponding damage done by a wati. So the shaman heals by through rigorous discipline and certain these ceremonies that they undergo, and also through an apprenticeship with a master shaman, they get to meet a spirit called the Pine Hoyawati, which is the people soul spirit king. I call it the demon king in my book, and because it's the king of all the spirits, it's the chief of all the lower spirits. So the Sequoias, basically, when they accomplish the healing, what occurs, if it's a complex healing, if the person is undergoing, life-threatening illness, they will invoke the spirit of the demon king. And then from what I understand, from what the elders have been generous to share with me, because this is, I can only understand this intellectually, I haven't experienced this myself, I'm just a facilitator of these workshops, and a student. I consider myself a student of traditional medicine, but I wouldn't go so far to say I'm a shaman, I'm just a humble student on the path. But the shaman elder masters, they say that what happens is that the demon king comes, and the demon king has the authority to identify within the patient which spirit caused the harm. The demon king then calls that spirit, and it's like a stage, it's like a theater occurs of sorts, and the demon king, basically requests of the spirit to remove the illness, and the spirit takes that away and puts it back onto itself and leaves. And then the shaman master will call the doctor spirits that come, and then they seal the body of the patient, and then they oftentimes will give advice on what kind of diet the person has to follow, or if there's like organ damage, what kind of plants the person has to take. But the core issue of the problem has been solved, which is the removal of the spiritual damage. Now the person can get better again, and the person will heal. And this is how the Sequoia heal. So, having said that, having the Sequoia elders there, they do accomplish healings during the ceremony, the healing ceremony. So, I mean, this is a wellness retreat, but we also are basically, you know, let it be known to the world at large and that if they feel this medicine is something that will help them, because it's a, you know, it's a personal choice. People have to go, I want this, and then pursue it. If for those who want this and want to pursue it, we're making it available for people who are seeking to be healed.
I think it's great that you use the physical, mental, spiritual. I call that holism or a holistic approach. And when I had lung cancer 41 years ago, my doctor gave me all of the physical things to do, but he didn't talk anything about mental, spiritual. And I think that's pretty common yet in this country, that the doctors will talk about the physical aspects, but they never mention spiritual, mental. And so I added things like prayer, meditation, visualization, affirmations, strengthening my patience, strengthening forgiveness, brotherly love, etc. And I think that the prayer and the spiritual work is just as important as anything physical that the doctor gives you. And so that's why my radio show is a holistic approach. My cancer foundation is a holistic approach, because it's so valuable to integrate the spiritual and the mental aspects with the physical. And so I think this is really great that you're doing that.
Thank you so much, Carl. That's great. Some of the things I remember on a few occasions seeing, for example, one woman, she had come and she had a very traumatic incident occur in her life with her family that she didn't want to talk about. But she was always like very unique. You could see she was, you know, depressed, and this led to an issue where she couldn't walk anymore, and she needed to crutches to walk around. And she'd been to expensive doctors. She came from fairly well-to-do family. She'd been through many kind of different health professionals, and has spent a lot of money on trying to heal, and still wasn't well. And no one really knew what it was. It wasn't a pinched nerve. There didn't seem to be physical damage, but this woman, if she couldn't walk without crutches, it seems she just fall to the floor. And then in one of the ceremonies, she just burst out crying and cried and cried and cried and cried for hours, for quite a while. And then just in the next morning, she just knew that she could walk up, she could get her crutches. And she had her crutches up to one side, so she tried to, like, you know, kind of crawl over to them to get them. She said to herself that she could stand up now, and she stood up, and she was standing up. And then she was walking around, and then she was dancing for joy, and she was skipping and dancing, and then the rest of the retreat, she threw her crutches, she left them there and gave them to me, and she said, "Oh, give these crutches here, sir." And so it's such a psychosomatic breakthrough, and often, you know, I recently read an article, too, about a man who, a doctor healing cancer patients, and on one incident he said that the person who was sick, basically, through his, you know, kind of guided meditation that he's helping her through, because he's a holistic healer, helped her to make a breakthrough in a very strong emotional attachment she had with being unable to forgive someone who had harmed her, and or some incident that occurred that she was just holding these very strong grudge and unable to forgive. When she truly forgave and surrendered and released that, she was healed of her cancer. And I'm not going to say that, like, you know, forgiveness is going to heal all types of cancer, and it's such a wide range of situations, but it's definitely at the core of all healing, this integration of body, mind, and spirit. And when that happens, we have to release, because it's the grudges, the resentments, and mental obstacles that are holding us from that holistic integration.
Another thing I found that was important, I was watching my dreams at the time, and it was a dream that sent me for a chest x-ray that diagnosed my lung cancer. I had a dream that told me to go. And I wonder if some of your shaman, when they go into their trance states, if they do not have things similar to dreams that will tell them, you know, what is best for certain patients, or is it a different process that they're in?
Well, when you see those takes on a patient, essentially, yeah, I mean, the dreaming is an important part, and dream interpretation is an essential part of indigenous lifestyles and indigenous culture. And the Sequoia, they have a very endemic way of interpreting their dreams, and do everything based on dreams, really. It's like they have a certain dream that indicates them not to go hunting, or not to go out. They're going to go hunting if they have a dream that tells them not to go, they won't go. Or if they have a certain type of dream, then they will go out hunting. Or for every, you know, important actions are always guided by dreams. And the way the healers, the way the shaman master heals today is that because of the discipline, they can have lucid, they discipline themselves to the point of being able to have lucid visions, where in their visions they can interact with spirit masters and immortals, different, like I was mentioning, the demon king, the doctor people that come from the water. And so when they heal from 3 o'clock in the morning till sunrise, which is when the celestial people come close to the earth, and they heal through song. They don't touch the person at all. They just sing in front of the person, and they have several tools. One is the leafy broom rattle. It's certain leaves that they shake, and so as they're shaking this leaf, and they have these very amazing songs that they sing too. That are not, they're extremely sometimes complex as well too. And it's more than like a melody. It's like a vehicle for the channeling of spirit. And they go into a trance through their chanting and through, because they're in the influence of the Yahé and the shaking of the leaves. And on the other hand, they hold the Matipuh, which means heaven rising, which is the ceremonial scepter, which is beautifully crafted of yarn and feathers and has red Nakafut as it comes to the top. I must add that the masters, when they do the healing too, they dress as their ancestors do. They have their crowns, which are red in the front and yellow on the side with the blue band. They have tunics, they tint their faces with aromatic face paint. On their arms, they tie aromatic herbs. On their wrists, they have beads and aromatic, well, finely woven bracelets and aromatic herbs as well. And so they go into a trance, a meditative trance. The herbs that they have on their arms are the smell that of countless ceremonies that they participated from the time of their initiations with their elder masters, so it helps them to touch into that continuum that transcends time and space. Past, present, and future become the immediate now in the mortal dimension. And so they, in that state, they have lucid visions. And so spirit doctors come to them and accomplish the healings, or tell them precisely what this person needs to do to heal, or prescribe herbs, or sprinkle sacred water on the patient, or remove spiritual damage. And then after the trance, in the morning afterwards, then the doctor will advise or administer the herbs, the medicinal plants, or give over the, give advice on certain diets, and then the person follows that and gets healed.
Great, good. Do they do soul retrieval?
That's all part of the healing, because...
Is it?
One of the things that, like, when they're looking at someone on a spiritual level, they can see, like, if the person's damaged on the soul level. And so they restore the person's soul level. That's the mastery, the wizardly mastery of these elder master healers. Because once that's restored, the physical level comes back. Because now what's happening, we see that people are, you know, basically choosing their life path, and, you know, humanity's direction for the most part is where spirit is obliged to follow matter. But the ancient cultures have a different orientation in life. Basically, to them, matter follows spirit.
I think everything follows spirit.
That's right. On a spiritual dimension, it does. That's why there's so much perversion, illness, and, you know, grave, almost irreplaceable problems. I mean, the problems of the world today might only be solved by an apocalypse. But that doesn't mean that on an individual level or on a small community level, we can't, you know, infuse life with more joy and see and be part of a positive transformation that we do see occurring. There's countless amazing things happening that are simultaneously improving the world while it's simultaneously getting worse, you know?
Right. Well, you know, Edgar Casey said, spirit is the essence, mind is the builder, and body is the result, or the physical is the result, which I think is very true. Everything starts at the spirit, and then it's magnified and built up in the mind, and then it manifests in the physical. So I think that...
You see, now is like what I mean by like spirit, like being forced to follow matter, is like we see so much addictions, mm-hmm. multiple kinds, which is mm-hmm. a body thing, you know, like the spirit wants to be free, so... But then people get out of that through different, you know, for appropriate lifestyle, through, you know, like discipline, self-discipline of like different kinds of like, you know, all the different kinds. But there's also just a grave amount of misinformation too. It's a convoluted mess really in the world today. But for people seekers, I mean, at the same time, there's more information available for people's wellness than there ever has been ever probably before too. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's all there for people who seek it. But, you know, the indigenous cultures follow spirit, you know, which is like, you know, a little bit like depriving the body of all the things it wants and channeling our life into a disciplined approach to life that follows a higher, you know, calling, a higher good. Mm-hmm. And those are made evident in the world through the virtues. Virtues like, you know, being kind, being loving, moderation, modesty. And then there's, you know, like the great book of like the Tao Te Ching, so beautifully and eloquently speaks about like the plain and simple path of spiritual self-development. And that's one of the things that I've been doing too, because I'm a student of traditional Chinese medicine. I've extensively studied the Taoist canon, and there's very beautiful books in the traditions of Tao to help people in align themselves and live a healthier, more wholesome life.
Mm-hmm.
For example, one book, which is attributed to Lao Tzu, the author of the Tao Te Ching, who's, you know, by some considered the father of Taoism and one of the great sages of antiquity. But Lao Tzu wrote one of the third books that not many people are aware of is a book called Straighten Your Way, or the Tai Shin Shan Kanyin Tian in Chinese, Straighten Your Way. And it's really, really an amazing treatise. It's called The Treatise on the Response and Retribution of Tao. And so it says that, it starts off by saying that, you know, basically good fortune and misfortune doesn't come through just an invisible door. Each person invites that into our own life,
mm-hmm.
based on our actions, our thoughts, and our way of living. And then the traditional indigenous cultures say the same thing. So these are like universal truths from both sides of the globe. And one of the things that I've been fascinated about is the similarities between Amazonian, traditional Amazonian societies and, you know, Oriental philosophy, like such as Taoism.
Mm-hmm.
And then both of them talk about the central pillar of these traditions are the union with an integral way of life, or the union with Tao, or the union with the celestial immortals.
Mm-hmm.
Which is basically pure universal law or pure virtue.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, yeah, that's the whole life path. It's, you know, discover how about going about doing that, and we have to make a lot of mistakes to get back onto the path. But what's important, like in the Taoist canon, Chuang Tzu says, the true fools are not the ones that are aware of their folly. The true fools are the ones that are not aware of their folly.
Mm-hmm.
So once we're awake to our folly, we can, like, you know, get back on track and mm-hmm. keep working on it. And while we do that, we can improve not only ourselves, but the world around us.
Right. Yeah, I think that if you reach the point where, if you're at that point, then the world around you is very different than what you see at a different point. I very strongly believe that if you're negative, you will attract negative, and your whole world is negative. Whereas if you're positive and have positive thoughts and actions, your world will be a positive world most of the time. But I think there's always some exceptions here and there.
That's correct. Carl, one more thing I'd like to add, too, about this in the sacred plant medicine tradition of Yahai is that it's extremely alkalining.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who's a doctor, a physician, who studies this tradition, but he also practices Western medicine.
Mm-hmm.
He did a test on himself. He took a pH blood reading, basically. He took a sample of his blood while under the influence of the Yahai and did a test on the pH, and it mm-hmm. came out to be just under 8.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it's extremely alkaline. All illnesses are acidic in the body.
Right.
And so the renewal ceremonies, which is a detoxification ceremony, they go ridding, you know, they go alkalining the body and ridding of toxicities. And so that's another thing that's at the core of all types of healing as well, that it's not just about, like, you know, taking medicines, but it's also truly about finding an inner balance.
Well, I think your diet, too. I use a vegan diet, and I eat primarily fruit, vegetables, grains, and nuts. and I noticed that I'm much more alkaline than I was when I was eating a little bit of chicken and a little bit of fish and some other, you know, more dense foods.
Yes, of course. Alkalinity and obtaining, you know, essentially higher alkaline body pH is essential for health. That's been well proven and documented.
Right.
And that's what this tradition does as well, too. It helps us thrive through. Like, you know, one of the ways that the body becomes acidic, not only through that, is through inertia, too. When people are sitting around too much during the day, watching too much TV. So to have the opportunity to get into nature, go on hikes, and then to take these plant medicines in this context as well, really helps to detoxify on a deep level.
Now, Jonathan, why is the gathering held in Costa Rica instead of in Ecuador? Because that means
we do have a lodge in Ecuador that we bring people to. We're starting to organize trips down there again.
Oh, do you?
We built a small indigenous thatched lodge with Miguel Paiwai's family. But in Costa Rica, it's a very unique place, and it's just such a gift. And the Sequoias really love coming there as well for many reasons. Currently, in the Sequoia territory, there's a lot of, like, the advancement of colonization. The colonization frontier is an expanding nightmare, really, with, like, thousands of acres of African palm plantations going in all up along the edge of the Sequoia lands. There's oil drilling going on right now in the Sequoia territory, oil operations. And it's just, it's really hard for people to go and witness that.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, try to heal, too. So it's beautiful for more rugged people. It's also the conditions that are more rustic. But the Sequoias love to come to Costa Rica too, as well, so they can have an experience. They really like to see a place, you know, where nature is protected, a place, and they go back with good stories. And also, the elders, you know, make decent money from their salaries, you know, the premium for their compensation for participating, and with percentages of the tuition, we do cool work on projects in the community that they see and are really happy about. So they really like to come and participate, and it's part of their heritage to share these traditions with anyone interested. So it's really an opportunity to, you know, make these wisdom known to greater global community. And at a lodge in Costa Rica, it's just a beautiful setting. It's a wilderness setting. We have protected rainforest right behind us, beautiful beach. People, we have a beautiful lodge with, you know, private cabins, so people have, you know, their space to, you know, comfortable private cabins with private bathrooms. They can, you know, have the private personal space and there's coming together space with a beautiful communal lodge. And then we have a guided kind of, you know, itinerary, like I was mentioning, with art therapy, yoga, massage, and then the ceremonies and nature exploration and swimming in the ocean. So it's just an opportunity, as I say, even the shamans need a vacation. And so the elders love coming to Costa Rica, and people, it's a closer point and easier to get to than the Amazon, so it's more accessible for people to come who might not be able to make it down to the Amazon, a bit more comforts as well. But the location where we are in Costa Rica is very special as well, because it's right between two oceans, the Caribbean and the Pacific. Even though we're on the Pacific, we're on the beach on the Pacific side in southern Costa Rica, but Costa Rica is a relatively thin country if you look at it geographically, and it's right there between two oceans, and at a kind of a balance point between North and South America. So the lodge is like an intention, like it's a healing retreat center with an intention that's kind of geophysically situated in a very sacred area right before us. Floating in the ocean, last floating in the ocean is the Caño Island, which is it's a sacred ceremonial center of antiquity. It's not used anymore as a ceremonial center. It's a national park now, but it's essentially, it was a very sacred place of the ancient navigator societies that were run. That all the ancient shamans were buried there too as well. And so the land, because of nature, is so pristine, and the animals aren't afraid, and because of this, you know, kind of geographical positioning of the place, and it's just really a supreme place for this kind of work to occur. And like, as we said, we let Mother Nature do the work. We're just facilitators, and we offer kind of a container.
Do you get families coming, or are they mainly adults, or...?
We get all kinds of people, from families to young adults to, you know, some of the teenagers to young adults and elders as well, too.
And who is maintaining the history on the plants and all that are there? You talk about the elders, so they're getting older. Are there young people that are interested in this, that are learning about the herbs and the plants and things that are available in the Amazon?
there's, for the most part, indigenous knowledge is being lost faster than the forest itself. And in an indigenous community, the lore of Western goods and the lore of the, this, like, you know, kind of illusion of, like, this simple, easy life that's, like, of abundance, you know, kind of thing, that's everyone's heart of everyone's dreams, which is kind of part of what pulls people out towards the cities, and people get wrapped up and stuff. It's like, for the most part, the transmission of this knowledge, sadly, isn't really being passed on. But each indigenous community, and, you know, is different. In some places, they're stronger, and they're working towards, you know, creating cultural bridges. Amongst the Sequoias, they're an ethnic minority. The oil companies are in there now, drilling for oil. Most of the youth work for the oil companies or have worked for the loggers, and have got wrapped up in this whole, you know, situation that's, you know, come through them, and it's a very difficult one to avoid because it's there, you know, come rolling over them. But they do have 100,000 or more acres of territory, and each Sequoia has, you know, significant tract of land to grow a lot of food. Amongst the Sequoia, the culture, actually, even though they're an ethnic minority, is still relatively strong. Like, they all speak the language. But in terms of the spiritual tradition, there's only one, actually, or two youth, actually, that have been following the path to learn sacred healing sciences. Many of them know a lot of medicinal plants because Western medicine is hard, they don't trust in it, it's expensive for them. So a lot of, like, you know, basic medicinal plants are, you know, everybody knows from stuff from the snake, but it's from healing. You know, but the sacred science of, like, the deep spiritual science of the Sequoia of the ceremony of Yahe is something that's, it's sadly waning, fading the traditions. That's a light, like a beautiful light that's, like, slowly waning, you know, it's on the verge of turning off, but will open up somewhere else. Because these traditions pertain to the celestial immortals. Many of the secrets of nature are being lost at this time because of our disconnect with nature. But at the same time, we have to have the faith that in some way it's going to pass on. And that's also what these council gatherings are about, because many people are more serious from the West, or maybe the next, so to say, we've been swallowed by the beast, and we've been digested and pooped out. Whereas, like, indigenous cultures in the end, when people are just being swallowed and digested, so while they're being digested, like, they can't really get, you know, like, orient themselves properly. They're being just, like, just thralled by the, you know, the consumer culture that's sweeping over Latin America. But there's more people interested in North America in recuperating this tradition. So it's also offering this opportunity, which is like this ancient, you know, like, prophecy that this spiritual wisdom, you know, that the sacred tradition is also meant to be passed on to people outside of their community. They've always been generous in sharing their knowledge because they believe that spiritual things, when they're shared, they grow. They get bigger.
And is the Amazon rainforest slowly disappearing also?
Just this morning, I saw time-lapse photography thing from, like, 1975 to 2015 of this one region of the Brazilian Amazon, and it's just pretty crazy to see. It's from, like, satellite imagery from, like, the 80s, overlapped to present, how these roads go in and the ranches grow and the forest is disappearing. Yeah, and the Amazon is still very large, and, you know, you can fly for hours and hours over nothing but rainforest and rivers, but from all sides, it's being attacked savagely by the advancement of the colonial frontier, African oil palm plantations, petrol companies, logging. And the Amazon has had a very savage history of colonialism since the, you know, the turn of the century with the arrival of the rubber tappers, which the casement study. This guy Roger Casement in 1904 was sent down by the Queen of England to investigate what's happening with the rubber houses, the English rubber houses. And the report he wrote was so atrocious that it was like one of the first signs of complete, like, civil uprising in England. And the consequence is that the rubber houses were closed down in Brazil. They were torturing the Indians, you know, like, murdering people in front of their families and install horror in them to get them to do, you know, work, like, you know, slave labor. And so there's, like, a very savage history of colonialism in the Amazon. But at the same time, the indigenous people, especially the Sequoias, they can speak to them because they work with them. And more particularly, it's amazing how, like, they have all the, like, you know, they could easily fall into the thing of, like, you know, like, basically prejudice or jealousy, or prejudices and stuff and jealousy trips. But the elders, at least, you know, they're very open-hearted people who don't judge people based on the color of their skin, rather than the quality of their heart. And they love meeting people who are interested in their culture, and, like, they are very, very wholehearted, integral people that are non-judgmental. The essence of Sequoia culture is a non-judgmental and non-impulsive society.
Jonathan, is there anything else then you'd like to say before we look at services and again talk a little bit about your gatherings and if you and your website and things like that?
Great, thank you, Carl. Yes, I would like to thank you for this opportunity to make this invitation available to people who are interested in wellness and interested in traditional indigenous cultures who would like to participate on these plant medicine retreats in Costa Rica. And all the information is on our website. They're called council gatherings, we call them. And the information is on our website, and it's Orchid, the beautiful flower that so many of us love and appreciate so much, the orchidoftheosa.com. Orchidoftheosa.com. That's O-R-C-H-I-D-O-F-T-H-E-O-S-A, because it's the Osa Peninsula, O-S-A, orchidoftheosa.com. And we're at the calendar events. You'll see the council gatherings are 10-day events. We have two council gatherings this January coming up, and 1 5-day half council at the first days of February as well. So we have 3 council gathering offerings this January, and I hope to see anyone who's interested in participating. They're stellar events. I wouldn't miss it for a single thing, and it's an honor and a great joy to be the facilitator of such these magnificent events. And I hope that through this radio talk show, some people will hear the calling and participate.
Great. Now, how often are these held?
They're held twice a year in Costa Rica and once a year and possibly sometimes twice a year in Ecuador.
Oh.
At the Sequoia Village.
Great. And this will all be on the website.
It's all on the website, on the calendar events.
Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Jonathan. It's very interesting, and I'm so happy that you're there as a younger person, keeping track of this and also keeping track of the rainforest and the cultural aspects and all. And your writing, I think, is great, and I'm sure you'll be doing more. And so it's been very interesting.
Yes, on my book, Rainforest Medicine, as you said, Preserving Indigenous Science and the Biodiversity in the Upper Amazon, I'm really happy the reviews have been quite positive, and anybody interested in this region is, I'm sure, will benefit greatly from reading the book. It's like a window into a whole other reality, and so I encourage people to also purchase the book. That can be found on Amazon.com. Just go to Amazon.com, Rainforest Medicine, and you can order the Kindle version or the hard copy.
Great. Good. Well, I thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Carl, for your recognizing our work and for this opportunity to share our work with the greater public. I really appreciate it very much. And also, I compliment you on your incredible and very important endeavors. I was reading the information you're saying about your work, and it's simply marvelous. So, more power to you. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Jonathan. In the time left, I would like to tell you a bit about my Cancer Foundation and ask for your support in funding this important work. This is the first time that we have asked for donations. The letter that I am about to read was written by a member of my board. It says, "Dear friends of Overcoming Cancer, the diagnosis of cancer is a devastating experience. I know this as I was once diagnosed with terminal lung cancer. Although a medical professional, I decided to seek alternative treatments, which ultimately cured my disease. I have been cancer-free for 41 years. As a cancer survivor and a professor emeritus in the field of nursing, I have a passion for helping others to deal with their cancer diagnoses. Through my radio program, The Holistic Health Show on BBS Radio, and my books, such as You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions, I showcase the work and results of practitioners who have had success with non-traditional approaches to the treatment of cancer. I fully believe that health and illness are processes resulting from the interaction of multiple factors in man, the agent, and the environment, and from this perspective, there should be multiple factors involved in the treatment and resolution of cancer and other disease processes. I have established the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation to offer those diagnosed with cancer an understanding of the range of holistic treatments available to treat their illnesses that can potentially offer them a cure for their disease, as well as improved quality of life. In addition to information, the foundation also has a goal of offering grants for non-traditional cancer research and treatment. We are seeking tax-deductible donations to help expand the impact of the foundation through helping to support promising research in alternative therapies and to offer grants for those who do not have the resources to seek non-traditional treatment. Please visit holisticcancerfoundation.com to learn more about the foundation and its work and to access the wealth of resources available there. Audiovisual information is also available on YouTube, and this is on the cancer website. Your tax-free donations made under the Donate button on the website will help support the mission of the foundation, which includes offering credible information on alternative approaches to treating cancer, as well as grants for non-traditional cancer research and treatment. You can also send a check made payable to the Holistic Cancer Foundation and send to me, Carl Helvey, Treasurer, Holistic Cancer Foundation, at 9 Raleigh's Way, Hampton, Virginia, 23664. A receipt will be provided for tax purposes. Thank you for joining me in offering knowledge, options, and hope to individuals suffering from cancer and their loved ones. Signed, Carl O'Helvey, President, the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. Information on how the foundation differs from others, board members, research on holistic natural ways to deal with cancer, including mental and spiritual interventions, interviews with cancer physicians and survivors, and more. If you would like to donate to the work I am supporting, there is a tab to donate, and I can offer you a tax exemption receipt if living in the United States. I also invite you to join me on Facebook at my Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Carl Helvey. On my Holistic Health Show page at www.facebook.com/pages/Holistic Health Show, and the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation page at www.facebook.com/beatlungcancernaturalalternative. On LinkedIn, I invite you to join me under my name, Dr. Carl O'Helvey. on Twitter. I invite you to join me at www.twitter.com/HolistHealthShow, HolistHealthShow. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to having you here in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.